Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Up front next, Congresswoman Liz Cheney promising she'll have something to say as the Republican Party gears up to cancel her for not touting Trump's election lie. Plus, breaking news, protesters gathering in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, after the family of Andrew Brown Jr. views more body cam video. They call the fatal shooting unjustified. And states of emergencies, long gas lines, markets tanking. In the United States, fears of a gasoline shortage growing. Let's go out front. And good evening, I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, Congresswoman Liz Cheney tonight promising she will have something to say, quote, in a little bit. This says the former president's acting attorney general, Jeffrey Rosen, who Trump handpicked, is going to testify tomorrow. And he's going to testify this. I quote him. The department had been presented with no evidence of widespread voter fraud at a scale sufficient to change the outcome of the 2020 election. No evidence of a stolen election. Now, just to be clear, all Rosen's doing is reaffirming what the Attorney General Bill Barr said, what the FBI Director Chris Wray said, what more than 50 court cases across this country already concluded. They're all consistent. They're all saying the same thing, the truth. But for the leaders of the GOP, the truth literally does not matter. The party's number two leader in the House, Steve Scalise, on the eve of the vote to remove Liz Cheney from her powerful leadership posts, tells CNN, quote, "It is not about right or wrong. It is not about right or wrong. It is about the focus of our conference and focusing on pushing back on the agenda that's being pushed by the Biden administration." OK, I want to take this in two parts. First, just the basic thing there that I said, this is not about right or wrong. So one of the two major parties in this country says that right or wrong on the basic fact of whether a presidential election was fraudulent and stolen does not matter. That's incredible. Now let's take the second part of what Scalise said. The kicking Cheney out of her leadership post is actually just being done so they can actually focus on pushing back on Biden's agenda. Well, that is a reason for kicking Liz Cheney out of her leadership post is demonstrably false. I mean, just listen to yourself, to Liz Cheney in recent days talking about Biden's agenda.
Around the globe, we're watching as our adversaries test us, as our adversaries threaten us. And so far, the Biden administration has been lacking sadly, in its response.
They massively increase spending, they massively expand the size and scope of the federal government, and then they come back around and impose middle-class tax increases.
Foreign, domestic, consistently against Biden's agenda. In fact, that's just consistent for Cheney. She stood up for her conservative policies her entire career. Her conservative score from the Heritage Action for America is 80%. It is not anything to do with Biden's agenda that is the problem here. It is that issue of right or wrong. It's only this one thing that is getting Cheney kicked out of her leadership position.
There really was the president and many around him pushed this idea that the election had been stolen. And that is a dangerous claim. It wasn't true.
The election wasn't stolen. The notion that the election had been stolen or that the election was rigged was a lie. And people need to understand that.
So that is why the GOP is kicking her out of leadership and canceling Liz Cheney. So, I mean, I just laid it out. I showed you. It's pretty clear what the facts are here. But you don't need to hear it from me. You could just listen to Republican Senator Joni Ernst. She said of the effort to remove Cheney, quote, "Cancel culture is cancel culture, no matter how you look at it. I support President Trump and his policy, so I have a slightly different view on that. But I still think we shouldn't be trying to cancel voices." Well, she says it like it is. And the truth is, of course, you know, the Republicans say they know a lot about cancel culture. It's become a rallying cry that's constantly on their minds. In fact, it is usually the first line of defense that they throw out there when under attack these days.
I'm not going to be silenced. I'm not going to be canceled.
If it continues, it won't just be Republicans who get canceled. It won't just be the president of the United States. The cancel culture will come for us all.
They can't cancel this rally or this movement or this tour or this congressman.
This cancel culture has gone too far, and we've got to change that. I refuse to bow to the cancel mob.
Well, of course, in this case, they're not bowing to the cancel mob. They are the cancel mob, canceling, their word, a leader of their party, who dares to speak the truth, again, about something so fundamental and basic to our confidence in our country as to whether a presidential election was fraudulent and stolen. This should upset anyone, no matter your party, no matter who you voted for. And in fact, I do want to point out that it is upsetting a few elected Republicans as well. Notably today, the third highest ranking Republican in the Senate, John Thune, said, and I quote him, "The only thing I can say is if we continue to rehash the 2020 election, we're going to lose the 2022 election." And he went on to specifically say, Thune specifically said, that the election was legitimate and was not rigged, saying, quote, "That's settled. Let's move on." In fact, Thune today joined a number of Republicans, a few, who are elected and are raising concerns with Cheney's purge.
"It will be perceived by the American people as she's being ousted for disagreeing with the president. We need all Republicans on board. If people feel as if they're not heard, that doesn't work."
She's being run out for one thing, her consistency. She said the same exact thing that Kevin McCarthy said on January 6th, which is Donald Trump is responsible.
And that is true. That is what McCarthy said then, not what he says now. Senator Mitt Romney also tweeting, "Expelling Liz Cheney from leadership won't gain the GOP one additional voter, but it will cost us quite a few." Still, though, I just gave you all the voices that we have on the record calling this out. They're not zero, but they're just a little handful compared to a mass pile of elected Republicans in Washington. Manu Raju is out front live on Capitol Hill. And Manu, that's the point. And I know you just spoke with Congresswoman Cheney. She told you she has something to say, quote, in a little bit. I know you've been speaking to all these members of Congress. What are you hearing from Cheney and from the Republican caucus?
Well, we know that Cheney's not going to go quietly. She would not answer my questions just moments ago. I tried to ask her about Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader who is moving behind the scenes to oust her. And she said very clearly, "I'll have something to say in a little bit." So we'll see what she ultimately says. And I did just ask Kevin McCarthy about all this. He also declined to answer questions, but he did confirm that he did recently speak to Liz Cheney within the last few days, even during all of this, as McCarthy has tried to align himself with Trump and as Trump has sought Cheney's ouster for her vote to impeach him. It was also her calling out Donald Trump for lying about the election. But what I can tell you in talking to a wide cross-section of House Republicans, it's very clear that most of them are in fact siding with Donald Trump, are in fact siding with Kevin McCarthy. They believe that Liz Cheney, her comments, her fight with Donald Trump has been nothing more than a distraction. Many of them don't want to call out Donald Trump about what he did in the run-up to January 6th, or the fact that he continues to say that the election was stolen and rigged. They don't want to get crosswise with the president, but they also don't want Liz Cheney bringing the issue up, in which they will have to answer questions about what their number three Republican leader is saying about all of this. Now, this all comes ahead of tomorrow's key vote. We do expect in the morning, overwhelmingly, the conference will vote to oust her. And then the question will be, how quickly will they move to replace her with at least Stefanik? And Aaron, I can tell you there are some concerns from some conservatives who are worried about Stefanik's more moderate record, even as she's aligned herself with Donald Trump and, of course, gotten his endorsement for that leadership job.
All right, Manu, thank you very much. And I should point out, so everyone knows to Manu's point, on that measure by which Liz Cheney has an 80% perfect conservative voting record, on that same measure, Elise Stefanik, who is likely to replace her, has a 48% conservative voting record. You can see the difference. Out front now, Jamie Gangel, our special correspondent, the Republican former governor of Ohio, John Kasich, who endorsed Joe Biden for president in 2020. Jamie, let me start with you. You have some new reporting tonight. What is Liz Cheney's thinking on all of this right now ahead of this vote?
Well, as Manu said, she expects it to be a lopsided vote. Very different from in February, where she won 145-61. This time, I think she is expecting the opposite to happen. But I think that she does not look at this vote personally. She looks at it as a vote of principle, and she looks at it actually as a vote on her colleagues and whether or not they are willing to stand up for the truth. They're willing to stand up for democracy. And this is just the beginning, Aaron. There is going to be life after leadership for Liz Cheney, and I believe she will be campaigning against Donald Trump far into the future.
So, Governor Kasich, on this point about Congressman Scalise that I quoted, right, here's what he told CNN. It's not about right or wrong. It's about the focus of our conference and focusing on pushing back on the agenda that's being pushed by the Biden administration. Obviously, I played Liz Cheney on both foreign policy and domestic policy, scathing criticism of Biden's agenda. OK, the only thing that they dislike her for is her calling out right and wrong. What do you say to Scalise?
Aaron, the whole thing is so crazy, right? And here's the thing. It's all about pursuing power. That's what this is about. The Republicans think they've got to kind of suck up to Donald Trump because they need him to fire up their base. And they're counting on redistricting, which is where they take the map and they make it good for their own party to win a majority. So it's all about power. And when they say when Scalise says they're out fighting Biden's agenda, I haven't heard anything about that. I hear Mr. Potato Head, and I hear about Dr. Seuss, and I hear about the cancel culture. I mean, where are they thinking about health care? What are they thinking about prescription drugs? What are they thinking about the environment? What are they thinking about the spending since they went out the door on spending under Donald Trump? So it's pathetic. No, Aaron, I'll say this. If they win the majority, they will moderate Joe Biden. I'm surprised at Joe Biden's performance so far. If they win the majority and they're in the House, they will moderate Joe Biden. He'll probably be happy with that. But the problem is, what are they going to be for then? And what are they going to do to improve the lives of Americans? Because that's why you get elected. You don't get elected to be in power, to be the leadership. You get elected to try to improve people's lives. And this is a sad day in our country. Another sad day. But we'll get through it.
So Jamie, I just want to ask you about this vote. Because as you point out, last time, couple months ago, right, when there was the vote about Cheney retaining this position, she won it. She won it 145 to 61. Now it's going to be a secret ballot again tomorrow, right? It was a secret ballot. So maybe people could say, we hate you for this Trump stuff, but we're going to vote for you. But she doesn't think that the secret ballot will go her way.
No. And maybe it won't be a secret ballot. So Governor Kasich knows this better than I do, back from his days on the Hill. When you have a conference vote, and keep in mind, Aaron, Liz Cheney tomorrow morning will be chairing this conference. She will be calling it to order. She may even do the ultimate power play and bring the vote to the floor herself. It could just be a voice vote, the yeas and the nays. But if there are people on the other side, and I am guessing there are, who want that number out there, who want to say she lost by X, then someone can call for a secret ballot. And it takes, I'm told, 5 people to second it. I think there are 5 people to second it. And then you will get that secret ballot, and then you will see the lopsided vote. But make no mistake, Liz Cheney is doing this, Aaron, because she thinks Donald Trump remains a threat.
And that's the thing. So, Governor, let me ask you, because when I was talking about the handful of Republicans who have stood up to this, other than Liz Cheney, right? So I played or quoted Romney, Kinzinger, Cassidy. Those are all people who voted for impeachment. But I had John Thune in there, okay, in leadership in the Senate. John Thune did not vote to convict Trump. Right. But today he came out and said what very few elected Republicans will say, which is that the 2020 election was legitimate. It was not rigged. He was very clear about that. What's the role for somebody like John Thune in the party who says that now, but did not vote to convict Trump for his, belief in that and the insurrection that came from it?
So it's a really great question. I mean, I used to serve with John Thune. We were in the House together. I like him a lot. And I just think he's telling it like it is. As you know, he's under fire from Trump because he said that the election was legitimate. So Trump's after him, too. He's trying to figure out how to do in Thune. And Thune, he's a great athlete. He isn't going to take any bunk from Trump. He'll be out there. win or lose, he's going to hit the boards hard. And, you know, Jamie said I was in the Congress. When I was there, I actually went to Congress. I didn't go to the circus. And now what we're seeing is we're seeing the circus. I mean, we have a terrible thing going on in Israel and the Middle East right now. We've got the cyber attack on our pipelines. We've got, you know, rising health care costs, potentially rising inflation. And they're, this is what they're messing with. I mean, you know, come on. Aaron, it's preposterous, isn't it? And you've been around a long time and you covered a lot of stories over the years that have been very important for our country financially. The issues that people really care about, and they're just not doing it. And it's just sad. It's a sad day for the party. We'll see what happens.
All right,
it's early.
Well, thank you both very much. And we'll see what Liz Cheney said when, you know, she said we'll hear what she has to say in a little bit. Well, next, protests on the streets of Elizabeth City. The family of Andrew Brown Jr. was able to see some more body camera footage from the day Brown was shot by police. But now two totally different stories coming out here. The family attorney is out front next. Plus, Florida has just joined a growing number of states declaring state of emergencies as fears of a gas shortage grow. This is an urgent crisis for Americans right now. Long lines at gas stations, and the markets are plunging because of it in a fear of price surges. How serious is the situation? And the trainer of the Kentucky Derby winner, Medina Spirit, first blamed cancel culture when his horse failed a drug test, but now he's got a new explanation.
Aaron Burnett Out Front, brought to you by Fast Sides, empowering and supporting your business to come back stronger than ever.
Breaking news, protesters taking to the streets in Elizabeth City, North Carolina. That's where the family of Andrew Brown Jr. was able to view more body camera footage of the deadly shooting today. The family's attorney says it showed a, quote, unjustified killing.
When the first shot fired, he was sitting in his car and then he began to back up. At no time did we see him go towards a sheriff deputy at any time.
He wasn't in the wrong at all. What's in the light? What's in the dark going to come to the light?
Out front now, Wayne Kendall, attorney for the Brown family. And Wayne, I appreciate having you back on the show. So tell me what the family saw in this video.
Well, as Chance Lynch told you earlier today when there was a news conference, that was an unjustified killing. What we saw the last time in the 20-second clip that they showed a couple of weeks ago, we saw a 19-plus minute clip today from five body cameras and one dash camera. And it essentially showed the same thing that we had previously seen, what we had all expected to see, which was that this was indeed an unjustified killing with sheriff's deputies firing into the vehicle unprovokedly. So we are at the same conclusion we were at before.
Okay, so the district attorney says, this is their version of it, they said deputies only fired when Brown drove towards deputies. Now, I know that today, you know, when you all had a chance to see this, your co-counsel said the first shot was fired before the car even moved, and that Brown never drove in their direction, whether going forwards or backwards. To me, this would seem, I think to a lot of people watching, like, gosh, when you see this would seem like a pretty basic verifiable fact. What happened, right? Did the shot come first? Which way did the car go? Where do you think this discrepancy is coming from, Wayne?
Well, obviously, the officials want to paint the picture in their best light, but the facts just don't bear what they say out. I've been to the scene. I've seen the tire tracks. That vehicle was in reverse, backing up, and then it sped across that vacant lot to the east and ran into a tree in the neighbor's yard. I mean, the tire tracks don't lie. I mean, you can see that vehicle never went toward those deputies who were standing in a driveway pad. And they were unloading from that driveway pad into that vehicle as it sped across the lot. I don't think that vehicle went toward those deputies in any way, shape, or form at any time. And that's what Chance Lynch identified today when he revealed what he saw on the 19-minute video.
So when you say the 19 minutes, okay, I know there's almost 2 hours of footage, right? So today, the family only saw 19 minutes. But you just laid out that they did see whatever they saw that was a compilation included 5 body cams and a dash cam angles. The judge says the rest of it, right, is, quote, not appropriate for disclosure. Do you have any idea what the judge means by saying that?
Well, I think what the judge is saying is that the petitions that were filed to reveal these recordings show Mr. Brown's image in only 19 minutes. But there are other videos that show other aspects of this shooting. And the judge said that, well, I can only let the family see what's in the video that depicts Mr. Brown's image. We want the entire video. We want the entire 2 hours and some almost 2 hours worth of video so that we can see what happened in the lead up, what happened in the aftermath. All of those moments are important for purposes of putting together what actually happened on April the 21st.
All right. I appreciate your time, Wayne. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right, and next, Arizona's governor signing a bill that purges tens of thousands from early voting lists. The state's Secretary of State is out front. And breaking news, Florida, now the 4th state to declare a state of emergency over fears of gasoline shortage. And those fears sending stocks plunging as well. Tonight, Arizona's Republican governor signing into law a bill that critics say could remove tens of thousands of people from the state's early vote-by-mail list. This comes as a Republican-led audit of 2.1 million votes cast in Arizona's most populous county, Maricopa, stretches into its third week, despite two previous audits, which found no evidence of any widespread fraud. The state Senate president who led the charge on the latest audit says it's about instilling confidence in the voting process, despite two audits already showing there to have not been an issue.
The sole thing is to get answers so that if we have any problems, we can fix them and we make sure that the next election is safer, cleaner, and run smoothly.
The audit itself, though, of course, has produced more questions than answers. A firm called the Cyber Ninjas was hired by Republicans to oversee the effort. That company's chief executive has amplified election conspiracies. Out front now, the Arizona Secretary of State, Katie Hobbs, who is a Democrat. And Secretary Hobbs, I appreciate your taking the time. I want to talk to you about the audit. But first, since you run the state's elections, I want to talk to you about this bill. You urged the governor to veto it. It removes people from a list where they automatically receive a mail-in ballot. And it removes them if they haven't voted over 4 years. He, though, went ahead and signed it into law. What's your reaction? What do you think the damage of this could be?
Well, I want to first make clear, it doesn't just remove voters who don't vote in 4 elections. It removes voters who might vote, but they might choose to not use their mail-in ballot to vote with, which is an option that we've long enjoyed in Arizona. The permanent early voter list is something that was passed into law by the Republican majority legislature. Currently, 3.2 million Arizona voters are on this list. That's 75% of our registered voters. So across all parties, it is very popular. And the effect that this will have is just it's going to make it harder for people to vote. And it is really unfortunate that this is the politicians' response to election results that they didn't like. And it is not doing anything to instill confidence or improve the system. It's making it harder for people to vote.
Okay, so all of that is important. And the fact that you're saying 75% of people get them, you've got 3.2 million people. The governor, though, says, look, no one's going to lose their right to vote. You get a notification, hey, you're going to be removed from this list because you haven't, been using this. And if you want to stay on it, you can say, I want to stay on it. If you don't reply, you don't get that mail-in ballot, but you can still go vote in person. No one's going to, take you off the roll to vote altogether. So basically, Republicans say, look, we're just not going to send ballots in the mail to people who do not use ballots in the mail. Put that way, a reasonable person could go, okay, I can see that. Why is that sinister?
Well, look, the senator who sponsored this legislation has introduced this bill or a similar bill for the last 10 years. Clearly, it's not popular because it has not passed the legislature for 10 years. I probably voted no on it 8 times when I was in the legislature. Oh. And she's now using this past election and the so-called voter confusion or the need to fix problems to now justify this bill and its passage, which isn't necessary. This election was the safest, most secure, and highly participated in election in recent history. And there's nothing that needs to be fixed. And so this is just fixing a problem that doesn't exist. And we've worked really hard to educate voters about how the vote by mail system works, and they're used to it now. And so anytime you make changes, especially changes like this that don't need to be made, then you're going to create more voter confusion, you know, making it harder for people to vote.
So now let me ask you about the audit, because as I pointed out, the audit, obviously, Maricopa County, your most populous county, 2 audits already done, showed there to be no problems of any magnitude. So now you've got your Republican, led officials hiring a private firm called Cyber Ninjas to oversee it. The chief executive of Cyber Ninjas has talked about various election conspiracies. Mm-hmm. So do you think that that is going to lead to this, you know, finding some kind of fraud where there is none, where prior audits have shown there to be none? Do you have that fear?
Well, look, this audit is clearly just an attempt to continue promoting the big lie and to continue sowing doubts in the election systems and creating disarray and confusion. When in fact we had one of the most problem-free elections in recent history. And so, yes, I'm very concerned. We did all of the post-election audits plus additional ones, and nothing was found. There were 9 post-election court cases with no evidence to support any fraud. Nothing was found. And yet here we are still trying to rehash the 2020 election. And this is going to do nothing but undermine our democracy.
All right, Secretary Hobbs, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next, breaking news, Florida joining a growing number of states tonight declaring a state of emergency over fears of a gas shortage. You can see the lines there on your screen after the pipeline hack. Just how bad could this be? And a top Republican urging colleagues to not support Elise Stefanik to replace Liz Cheney. Well, how come? Breaking news, Florida, just becoming the 4th state to declare a state of emergency. One of the largest pipelines in the United States is shut down after a cyber attack. And drivers are lining up to fill up on gas amidst a fear stations will run out, which is becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. The Dow plunged nearly 500 points today, in part because of the growing concerns about gas supply and a surge in prices. The Colonial Pipeline is what's at stake here. It starts in Texas. It's on your map there. Runs all the way up the East Coast. It is responsible for nearly half of all fuel consumed in the region through which it passes. Okay, so this is a huge thing. It was just shut down by hackers. The whole thing is pretty terrifying and unsettling. However, in terms of supply, Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm says there's no need for panic.
Much as there was no cause for, say, hoarding toilet paper at the beginning of the pandemic, there should be no cause for hoarding gasoline, especially in light of the fact that the pipeline should be substantially operational by the end of this week and over the weekend.
Phil Mattingly is out front at the White House. And Phil, you know, publicly the administration is saying no cause for concern here. But obviously the reaction that we're now seeing in the public and in these states is unsettling. So what's really going on now in the White House behind the scenes?
Yeah, look, and I think part of the reason you see the White House and top administration officials making clear there should not be any reason for concern is because they recognize that this could get very serious and spiral very quickly if you see the crunch in demand like you've seen over the course of the last 24 hours. Look, when you talk to White House officials, they make clear they have already taken kind of a whole of government approach to this. Obviously, on the regulatory side from the EPA, the Department of Transportation, waivers related to emissions, trying to mitigate some of the effect it's having on specific states that are
in this pipeline's path. That's something that's happening. I think you're also seeing a big public communications effort. Obviously, they've had experts or top administration officials at the White House briefings. You're seeing top administration officials in regular phone calls with the governors of the states where they are most affected, trying to get the message across that, again, this isn't expected to be long term. And if everything was normal, the supply should technically be enough at this point in time. And if it's not, they're trying to surge or at least provide the regulatory side of things to allow for the surge of more supply. But again, this is what people see and how they react. And I think that's the biggest concern right now at the White House as they push forward on this.
All right. Thank you very much, Phil. So I want to go down to Daniel Yergin, Pulitzer Prize winning author of The Prize, All About Oil, expert analyst on energy, and the vice chairman of IHS Market, also the author of The New Map, Energy, Climate, and the Clash of Nations. So no one knows more about all this than you, Daniel. And so let me just ask you this basic question. You've got four states declaring states of emergencies, lines, gas stations running out of fuel. Is there a legitimate supply issue right now for gasoline?
Yes, it's not a complete disruption. It's 45% of the supply. The Southeast is particularly vulnerable. But what you have now is self-fulfilling. As I think you said it, it's a panic buying. So some of the gas stations we've talked to in the Southeast have volume four times as much as normal, as people see these reports. And instead of having their tanks one quarter full, want their tanks completely full. And so I think it means the next few days, as it's going to continue like that until we start to see a restart of the colonial system.
And so, you know, you're talking about gas stations you spoke to. In these four states with states of emergencies, right now we're hearing 30% of Metro Atlanta gas stations are now out of gas. I mean, that's a pretty serious thing. And as I said, it's deeply unsettling. 30% of gas stations in Metro Charlotte and Raleigh also reportedly out of gas. How bad could this get, Daniel?
I think if it continues, I mean, we've heard both the pipeline and the government saying it will start up by the weekend, and that means by next week it would start to improve. If it takes longer to get on, then it becomes a more serious problem. And as you say, if these stations are out, that means that people will be impacted in their ability to get around. There are things you can do. Bring up gasoline by tanker from the Gulf Coast, and they're beginning to give approvals for that. That would make a big difference. So we see some ships more ships coming from Europe. Letting truck drivers who drive tank trucks operate for longer will make a difference. So there are things to be done here, but it isn't a complete shortage. It isn't like a hurricane where it's knocked out. It's something less than half the supplies.
It is, though, you know, as I said, deeply unsettling, right, that we have a pipeline that on its own is responsible for half of the supply of something without which modern society and our lives cannot exist. And it just gets knocked out by a bunch of hackers in Russia. Right. It's deeply unsettling.
Exactly. Yeah. Up till now, Aaron, we've had hurricanes, other things knock it out. But this is a digital disruption. And I think this is the biggest attack on American infrastructure that I know of, biggest cyber attack. And to say it's a wake up call would be an understatement.
Final question. Has the Biden administration been a little slow on this? And they didn't see that there would be this sort of panic?
Well, I think, I can't say about that. But once you have the pipeline go down, you're going to get panic and it's just going to reinforce itself. So, I mean, they're taking the steps now and sending the message of reassurance. And presumably they're in contact with the pipeline and know kind of part of the key thing is making sure the pipeline system is safe and resilient. And then how do you resolve dealing with these criminals?
All right. Thank you very much, Daniel Yergin. I appreciate your time. And next, a top Republican encouraging his colleagues not to back Congresswoman Elise Stefanik for Liz Cheney's leadership post, saying she's out of the mainstream. Well, that's true on policy, but what do Stefanik's voters think?
She's a breath of fresh air.
She's a miserable, ambitious demagogue.
And the trainer of Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit offering up a new explanation as to why his horse failed a crucial drug test. New tonight, Republican Congressman Chip Roy, a top member of the House Freedom Caucus, urging colleagues to not support Elise Stefanik to be the next House GOP conference chair because of concern she's not conservative enough. And another member of the caucus, Ben Klein, telling CNN he also has reservations about Stefanik. So what do voters in Stefanik's own district make of her rush to the right? Athena Jones is out front.
she's a breath of fresh air.
She's a miserable, ambitious demagogue.
Essex County, New York, among the swingiest of swing counties. One of just 25 in the country to vote twice for Barack Obama, choose Donald Trump in 2016, and then pivot back to Joe Biden in 2020.
This is a classic purple district.
Maybe that's why opinions of Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, poised to become the highest-ranking Republican woman in Congress after embracing Trump's lies about the 2020 election, are decidedly mixed here in the small town of Willsboro.
I know she's already done a lot of good stuff for a lot of the towns and counties around here, and I think she would do an excellent job in this job.
She's backing the big lie, and Trump, too, so I'm not supporting that at all. In her first term when she ran up here, I voted for her, but then I wouldn't vote again for her.
The 36-year-old Harvard graduate worked as an aide for President George W. Bush and for Mitt Romney's 2012 presidential campaign. Brian Mann of NPR has covered Stefanik for years.
I think any political observer 2 years ago would have said that Elise Stefanik would have been in Liz Cheney's corner in this fight.
Stefanik campaigned as a moderate in 2014.
With new ideas and fresh leadership, together we can get it done.
She was someone who opposed Donald Trump early on things like NATO and his attack on NAFTA. Moderate right down the line.
Stefanik was endorsed in that first run by Romney, now persona non grata among many base Republicans for standing up to Trump. Stefanik has taken a different tack, becoming a fierce ally of Trump during his first impeachment.
This has been an unfair process from the start.
And voting to overturn the election results.
Tens of millions of Americans are concerned that the 2020 election featured unconstitutional overreach by unelected state officials.
And she's won over some voters who are pro-Trump but had their doubts when Stefanik, who grew up in Albany, claimed to be from here.
I'm Elise Stefanik, a small businesswoman from Willsboro.
I just wasn't impressed. If you can't tell the people you're trying to represent where you are actually from, that just spoke volumes to me, but I am really glad that I put that aside because she really is trying her best for the North Country.
As Stefanik's political star has risen and her embrace of Trump has grown stronger, others here complain she has left her district behind.
There are a lot of very important issues here, as with many rural areas, drug abuse, health care, broadband access, which is critical now, education. I don't see her talking about the North Country and the issues that are involved here.
One thing seems clear.
She is a very different politician now than she was a couple of years ago. Different policy ideas, different allies, shedding, you know, people who had been close to her for a long time. And that's turned out to be a winning strategy.
And that was Athena Jones reporting from Willsboro. And next, a big announcement about the future of Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit. Tonight, Medina Spirit will be allowed to compete in the Preakness Stakes. The Kentucky Derby winner's status was in question after post-race testing revealed Medina Spirit had more than double the allowed amount of a steroid in his system. Today, trainer Bob Baffert admitted Medina Spirit had been treated with an antifungal ointment that contains the steroid. But it comes after Baffert, who is a horse racing legend, had denied Medina Spirit had the steroid.
That's the only way it could happen. Contamination is the only way because that horse was not treated by anybody. And we're going to investigate who touched the horse, who was near him. He went from the Derby. After the Derby, everybody's up there touching. I mean, there's so many ways these horses could get contaminated. And when they're testing at these really ridiculously low levels, and this America's different. And it was like a cancel culture kind of a thing.
Of course, he has now admitted that Medina Spirit was treated with the steroid. Nick Watt is out front. And Nick, you know so much about this industry, and that's what it is. It's a huge business, and Bob Baffert is sort of the king of it. And now he's admitting, after saying cancel culture, the steroid was an anointment that the horse got. Tell me what you know, how this could happen, why it's such a big deal.
Well, Aaron, I mean, listen, mistakes can happen. And they are saying that they did not know that this steroid, betamethasone, was in this ointment that they were rubbing on this horse. Now, I found out today that Baffert was actually dinged for using betamethasone back in September. Different horse, also in Kentucky, and he was fined $1,500 for that. So I've been emailing with his lawyer today, and his lawyer told me, we decided to accept that punishment and move on. Importantly, after that event, a decision was made to not use betamethasone again in the Baffert barn. So we know that the only way it could have found its way into the horse's system in this case, and he says, by the way, it still needs to be confirmed by the split sample. He said the only way was through some sort of innocent contamination event. Now, listen, that can happen. And the rules in horse racing are complex, different rules for different states. Also, a drug like this, you're allowed to use it out of competition in Kentucky. You just can't have it in the horse's system on the day of the race. Now, why is doping in horse racing a big deal? Well, it's not just the performance enhancing, the cheating. It's also about safety. So if you've got a horse that's injured and you pump it full of painkillers, then it can run, it's oblivious to the injury, and it does itself a very, very bad
injury.
It's
inhumane.
Aaron?
So let me just ask you. So Medina Spirit gets to go in the Preakness, which is the next round of the Triple Crown.
Yeah.
And that's what makes horse racing have its widespread appeal. Baffert, though, has now been banned from entering any of his horses into races at the Churchill Downs racetrack. Which means that Baffert, who I said is sort of the king of horse racing, who's trained two horses that have won the Triple Crown, essentially could never win a Triple Crown again. I mean, how big of a blow is this?
Yeah, listen, I mean, Baffert is a colossus in this sport. You know, the white hair, the signature blue sunglasses, but it's not all flash. You know, the numbers back that up. You know, he has won over $320 million in a 30-plus year career, 13,000-plus starts. He's placed 1-3 in half of those. He is a big deal. And, you know, if there's a stain on Baffert's legacy, then there is a stain on the entire sport. That's how big this guy is. Now, he's, you know, had some issues in the past. He's got over them. We're not saying this is definite. That split sample still needs to come back. But if there's a stain on Baffert, staying on the sport.
All right. Nick, thank you very much. And thanks to all of you. AC360 starts now.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country, Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.